Welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Chatterjee, joined once again by my co-host, Breanne Depesh, as we dig into some of the key energy policy issues that are on the landscape for 2023. 2022 was a busy year. 2023 could be just as newsy. Let's hop right in. Breanne, what have you been covering and what do you anticipate tracking over the next few months?
Honestly, Neil, not going to lie to you, this past week has been dominated, as much of the energy world knows, by the gas stove debate or gas stove gate, maybe we could call it. It all kicked off, as readers will recall, when Richard Trumka Jr. suggested in a Bloomberg interview that his agency, the U.S. Product and Safety Commission, was willing to do, quote, whatever it takes to regulate gas stoves, including a potential ban. This really set off a flurry of indignation from House Republicans, who vowed to stop any movement from going forward, from some Democrats as well. And ultimately, the White House was forced to put out a statement saying that a federal ban was not happening, and as was his boss, the head of CPSC. So that's dominated a lot of my week.
It's a real story, though. I mean, so I got pulled into this a little bit. I was actually on Fox Business Wednesday night, and then I posted a link to my hit on Twitter, and it just blew up. And people, it felt like the culture wars. And I had fun with it. Like, I made a little quip that if you really wanted to do something about childhood asthma, go above and beyond banning gas stoves and you ban pets. That was deliberate to try and drive some coverage. But let's unpack the issue a little bit, right? Because obviously it's not going anywhere. The CPSC is an independent agency, multi-member. Trumka didn't have the votes. But there are some liberal cities and states that are taking steps to do this. So some people might want to say that this is kind of overplayed, but it's a real issue. Can you walk our listeners through what is some of the policy behind this? Is there really research indicating that gas stoves are dangerous? Are electric stoves better? And what are the implications? And what Trumka was talking about was new stove, right? Not existing. I don't know that that's any better, but this wasn't quite the simple black and white culture war thing that folks like myself, guilty as charged, and others made it up to be. Maybe expand a little bit for our listeners on this.
To be fair, I think there are good arguments coming from proponents of gas stoves as well as those opposed to them. Basically, a lot of this coverage was based on an RMI study, which is an environmental think tank, and it found that gas stoves of pollution causes 12.7% of childhood asthma. And there has been some criticism of this debate, both from analysts and from people within the gas industry, as expected. They point out that this study basically relies on data from 27 other studies and essentially guesstimates. We don't actually know how many gas stoves there are in specific states. Only 9 states make that data available. There's a lot that we don't know. So that study's come under some criticism. I believe the American Manufacturers Association or some large group put out a statement basically saying that there are many household appliances that reduce emissions. And while stoves are one of the largest ones, it's impossible to completely have like an emissions-free method of cooking, right? But yeah, definitely a very hot topic and one that has ignited a lot more passion than I expected. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's something that I'm going to keep an eye on because, like I mentioned, you got action at the state and local level on this. And I'm old enough to remember when it was laughable that people would question natural gas pipelines. And here we are maybe a decade plus later, and something that used to be completely uncontroversial has become very controversial. So it could be that this topic continues to be a center of a focus and discussion.
I did a report just examining some of the various state and local policies that have been adopted, because of course, I think that's largely going to be what we're going to see here. I don't think some sort of federal agency level push is possible. All four other commissioners on the Consumer Protection Commission rejected Trumka's idea, but some sort of additional regulation maybe down the line is possible. But in the meantime, looking at various cities, what they've done is pretty interesting. The city of Ithaca, as other people might recall, adopted the most restrictive law, basically not only banning gas appliances and gas-powered heaters and things in new homes, but also retroactively going back and updating all their buildings and homes to include the zero emissions electric appliances. So this was a pretty significant development from them. We've seen big swings from New York, a bunch of cities in California, the state of California itself. So an issue that's not going away. And then we have some red states that have adopted laws basically prohibiting natural gas bans. So that's the opposite side of the spectrum.
Well, what else have you been covering? That's obviously been an issue that's garnered a lot of attention, but there's so much else happening both domestically and internationally. What have you been writing about?
Lots of stuff on basically the effects of the G7 oil price cap that took effect last month alongside the EU's ban on Russian seaborne oil imports. Their ban on Russian refined oil products takes effect in February. Basically, Russia has since said it would retaliate by issuing a 5-month ban to countries that abide by the G7 price cap beginning in February, and also threatened to curtail production by up to 700,000 barrels per day, although that number could go higher. Markets are kind of volatile right now, I would say, because we see China largely struggling to reopen as it battles the resurgence of COVID cases. So on the demand side, I think producers don't really know what to expect. They don't know how much kind of supply demand or market tightness that we're going to see going forward. But some are pretty much sticking to their guns, saying they expect oil to reach around $100 a barrel, if not a bit less, by mid-year. On that note, I did want to kick things back over to you, Neil, given your expertise in the agency world. What has FERC been up to? What are your expectations there? And on the domestic side of things for 2023?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of the focus in 2023 is probably going to shift to the agencies because I don't see a lot happening, quite frankly, in Congress. In the aftermath of the election, look, we have a 50-50 country with a 50-50 House and a 50-50 Senate. House narrowly in Republican control, Senate narrowly in Democratic control. And we saw with the Speaker election of Speaker Kevin McCarthy that getting anything done in the House, from naming a Speaker to raising the debt limit to funding the government, is going to be very difficult. And so the idea that permitting reform or something significant on the energy policy landscape is going to get through both houses and get to the president's desk, not impossible, but certainly a very high degree of difficulty. And so it's going to shift a lot of the focus to policy, to the agencies and the courts. My former agency, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is in the midst of a major leadership shakeup. The chairman who succeeded me, former Democratic Commissioner Rich Glick, wanted another term, was renominated by President Biden, but Senator Joe Manchin, the chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, which controls and oversees FERC nominations, declined to even hold a hearing for Chairman Glick. So his term ended and he had to leave the commission. He was recently replaced by Willie Phillips, one of the Democratic commissioners, the former chairman of the DC Public Service Commission. He was viewed amongst the options as a moderate pick, a centrist pick. He was viewed as Joe Manchin's pick. And he now takes the helm of the agency at a critical time as FERC undergoes reforms to how transmission lines get built in this country. You got $369 billion in Inflation Reduction Act money that's out there. Many have said all of that investment is all for naught if you can't get that clean energy onto the grid, and you can't get that clean energy onto the grid unless you have transmission. And so FERC's got their hands full there. And then there's still this issue about gas certificates for natural gas pipelines and liquefied natural gas export facilities and what FERC's reviews will entail. And I'm hoping that now Chairman Phillips will bring some pragmatic moderation to a process that has gotten a bit messy, and hopefully we can see some much needed projects come out of FERC. I think other agencies are going to be in the spotlight as we pivot to IRA implementation. I think there's going to be a lot of focus on Treasury, on the IRS, and how some of these tax incentives are going to be handled. DOE has got a lot of dollars that they're going to be trying to get out the door to effectuate the results of the Inflation Reduction Act. And so I think with limited action in Congress, I think the administration is going to be focused on getting those dollars out the door. But with the House in Republican hands, I certainly expect Republican committees will do their fair share of oversight to look for the next Solyndra and to make sure that these funds and incentives are being deployed in a responsible manner. So there should be a lot of interesting dynamics and tensions there. EPA will continue, you know, that agency's work in both the air and water space. I think what will be interesting to see in the EPA regard is the courts. And, you know, we saw the decision in West Virginia versus EPA introduced this new construct of the major questions doctrine. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, whether it's SCOTUS or in the lower level courts. And will some of these EPA actions be sent back early on because they fail to meet muster under this new legal construct of the major questions doctrine? So no shortage of critical issues domestically, and with Congress divided, lots of focus on the agencies and the private sector as well. Really interesting decisions that are coming about. What do we do with China? You know, significant impact on the solar industry right now as the U.S. government continues to crack down on China and Chinese imports. That has implication on domestic industry. And the Inflation Reduction Act did make investments in bringing the supply chain home for clean energy, but that's going to take time to play out. What happens in the interim is going to be fascinating to watch.
Kicking things back to Congress for a minute, what do you think about some of the new leaders of the committees? What do you think we're going to be seeing the House produce? They've already taken some action on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, passing a bill with pretty overwhelming Republican support that would ban the DOE from selling the nation's reserve oil to China and countries that China sells to. How much do you know about Frank Lucas, Kathy McMorris Rodgers? They've been around in Congress for a while. And what do you think their tenure kind of will hold for Congress in this term?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Kathy McMorris Rodgers taking the helm of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Look, this is a historic landmark ascension. She's the first woman ever to chair House Energy and Commerce. And I think that's very exciting. Frank Lucas has been in Congress for a long time, is someone who's held in very high regard. And his committee is going to be central, as I think, as we look to what policy could move in the coming next couple of years. You know, the Farm Bill is something that could be a vehicle to get some energy policy going. What will be interesting to see is if the committee chairs can do their work, restore regular order, and get bills processed in that manner, will they see the floor, and what form will they see the floor? And I'll be interested to see how the agreements that Kevin McCarthy struck with the 20 members that sort of held up his ascension to the speakership, how will those agreements play out? We're talking about three members of the Conservative Freedom Caucus on the Rules Committee, which really influences what bills come to the floor and what form they come in and what amendments can be offered. Even if you have a delicately brokered product that comes out of committee, if the Freedom Caucus doesn't like it, they'll have significant influence over how these things move forward. That dynamic to me is going to be fascinating to watch. Do we have regular order and bills coming to the floor and being amended? And do we get a smooth process, or do things sort of get chopped up? I look at this conservative sort of climate agenda, energy agenda, that a number of committees came together last year under Kevin McCarthy's leadership to pull together. You had resources, ag, energy and commerce, the science committee, all kind of working together to put forward policies that would comprise a Republican energy strategy. Even if the leadership and the committees bless it, though, if the Freedom Caucus members don't like it and they've got outsized influence on the Rules Committee, could that scuttle some of those provisions from even making it to the floor? It's going to be really interesting to watch.
Neil, I think that's a really good point. And I think we're starting to see some of the fissures emerge within the Republican Party that were really on display in 2016 and kind of the aftermath of that with Democrats, right? You have these various kind of battling factions within the party itself. Well, I guess they've always been there to a degree. You know, the opposition to McCarthy's leadership was not new. They've certainly feel like just deepened with time. And so it will be interesting to see just how much legislation they will be willing to block and how far they're willing to take this fight.
Brianne, you and I are going to have a lot of fun covering these issues over the next year. Sadly, we're going to have to take a bit of a brief hiatus from the Plugged In podcast because we are losing our stalwart producer, Stephanie. She's been amazing in really pulling these episodes together and cleaning them up so that you and I both sound eloquent and smart, much smarter than I deserve. I have so appreciated the good work she's done and will very much miss her. But Plugged In will go on. Hopefully we'll get a new producer and resume these really fun and interesting conversations.
Yes, my hope is to be back sooner than later and with a really exciting guest lineup. But wanted to also shout out to Steph for, again, making us sound much more polished than at least I ever am. And I don't know, Neil, should we end this episode with something fun like we typically do? I feel like it would break with tradition if not.
Well, I feel like we should end with something fun about Steph. I made the mistake of calling her Stephanie when she gets so mad at me for doing. So Brianne, why don't you close out this episode and the end of Steph's run editing Plugged In with something fun about Steph.
Ooh, something fun about Steph. She likes to say I wear the same earrings every time I do a TV hit. So she bought me windmill earrings for our work Secret Santa, which was hilarious. And I love them. She's very witty and has a great sense of humor. And I just feel like she has the best one-liners in the newsroom. Like I can hear her talk and she'll just make me laugh from the other side of the room all the time.
That's so great. Well, she's the best. Steph, thank you for everything. Thank you for editing this episode and best wishes in your new endeavors. And to our listener, thank you for tuning in to the Plugged In podcast. And we will be back before you know
it. Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Thanks so much again for listening to Season 3 of the Plugged In podcast. You can keep up with all things energy by following the Washington Examiner on all of our social media channels and by subscribing to the Daily on Energy newsletter, written by me, Brianne Depish, and my co-author, Jeremy Beeman.